Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
Graduation is a sweet occasion, but finding the perfect gift can be a bitter struggle. MMS.com has a solution. Personalized M&Ms. Just imagine the look on your grad's face when they receive a custom candy creation featuring their school's colors, name, and even their photo printed right on some M&Ms. It's a thoughtful way to celebrate their accomplishments and make the occasion even more special. Visit MMS.com to create your own personalized gifts and party favors for graduations, weddings, birthdays, and more. That's MMS.com. Use code WONDERY to receive 15% off your next order.
Hey, everybody. As you know, I try not to make this podcast about the news of the day. But sometimes stuff happens just as I'm about to record my intro. And I'm doing this the day after Trump suggested injecting disinfectant into your bloodstream as a way of killing the coronavirus. Well, look, the president was spitballing. Sometimes you come up with your best ideas when you're spitballing, and sometimes you just have to think outside the box. And injecting disinfectant into your veins is an outside-the-box idea. And it was not a good one. It is a way that some people kill themselves. But look, chemotherapy is rough on people, and it's used for good. So you don't want to discourage this kind of unfettered thinking, and I mean unfettered. By that I mean any knowledge, for example, of how the human body works, because that knowledge is going to hold you back if you're trying to think outside the box. For example, hydroxychloroquine. So an NIH study found it to be ineffective and dangerous. But as the president said, you have nothing to lose unless, you know, in your case, it causes irregular heart rhythms and kills you. And I don't mean that sarcastically. Well, just as I sat down to record this, President Trump started tweeting about a new drug that he's found that he's very high on. Here's the tweet. Just heard about a drug that is very exciting. Placebo will be a total game changer. Now he continues, placebo has been tested in more clinical trials than any other drug. So many trials you wouldn't believe. That's that. Then a new tweet. Placebo is amazing. It has been so effective in so many clinical trials that scientists have a term, the placebo effect. So effective, you wouldn't believe. And that you wouldn't believe has 4 exclamation points. Now a new tweet. Dr. Fauci just gave me a placebo pill. Tasted a little sweet. Says I can't get COVID-19 now. Suggested I go to George Washington Hospital and give out placebo pills to COVID patients in the ICU as a photo op. Great idea. Dr. Birx thinks so, too. Well, I certainly trust Dr. Fauci. Not entirely sure about Birx. Speaking of which, Peter, my producer, has suggested that I record a public service announcement. Hi, this is Al Franken. You may not realize that many of the household items stored under your sink can be very dangerous if you or your child ingest them. That's why the phone number for poison control should always be posted on your refrigerator. And now, during this dangerous time, on your TV. 1-800-222-1222 is the number to call if someone in your home drinks or eats poison. That's 1-800-222-1222. Okay, boy, I got a couple things to complain about. I don't know if I've done this yet. On the $2 trillion package, there is a piece of that that has $170 billion for real estate investors, which lifts the cap on how much depreciation they can deduct from their taxes. Who's that for? $170 billion for real estate investors. So who's that for? Well, the Joint Committee on Taxation, which is under the Finance Committee in the Senate, did an analysis of this. This is $170 billion. 82% of the benefits of it are going to go to people who make over $1 million a year income. Over $1 million a year income are going to get 82% of the $170 billion. Why is that in there? Why is that in there? Is it because somebody made a deal if you save Boeing, we'll let you do that? I don't know how that gets in. I don't know if you look at who that helps, who real estate investors, there's a lot of them in New York. There's a lot of them all over the place, I suppose. Okay, the average benefit they get is $1.6 million. That's to those people. Why? We are going to have trouble in this country with people getting enough to eat. And for some reason, the United States Senate thought the people who make over $1 million a year annually needed another $1.65 million in tax breaks. That's just corrupt. Something's wrong there. That is corrupt. And this is from George Packer's article coming up in the June 2020 Atlantic. The article is, "We are living in a failed state." I'm going to quote this. "When the virus came here, it found a country with serious underlying conditions, and it exploited them ruthlessly. Chronic ills, a corrupt political class, a sclerotic bureaucracy, a heartless economy, a divided and distracted public. It took the scale and intimacy of the pandemic to expose their severity, to shock Americans with the recognition that we are in the high-risk category." This pandemic exposes our country as a failed state. And this may be the end of America. This may be the end of America. Obviously, it didn't have to be this bad. We had a president of the United States who ignored it all for a good 6 weeks, if not 2 months, who was warned by the HHS secretary, and he told the HHS secretary, "You're being alarmist, and I really, really want to focus on flavored vaping. That's what I really want to get, flavored vaping is the end of America." I kind of knew that, by the way. I've always said that. All right, we have a great one today, you know, for a change, an important one too, you know, for once. That's because my guests are Billy and Debbie Shore, brother and sister who 35 years ago started Share Our Strength, a nonprofit which works to solve the problems of hunger and poverty in the United States and around the world. And frankly, Share Our Strength is one of these goody-goody organizations that helps people in need, if you're into that type of thing. As I said, they've been doing this for 35 years, and 10 years ago they created a national program, No Kid Hungry. And because here on the Al Franken podcast, we're trying to put some focus on our vulnerable during this crisis, we decided to have Billy and Debbie tell us about what they're doing and yada, yada, yada. Okay. Actually, it's pretty inspiring, I got to say. And after listening, I think you're going to want to help them. In fact, I'm making a sizable contribution to No Kid Hungry myself. Okay, not me. It's my political action committee. $25,000. Speaking of which, we're also giving $25,000 to Women's Advocates, a shelter for victims of domestic abuse in St. Paul, Minnesota. And if you go to my website, alfranken.com, you can find a video for Women's Advocates where I draw a map of the United States from memory, and I show you how to do it. And you can enter the raffle and win the map. And I think you're just going to be astounded by what I can do with the map. Okay, so now here's my interview with Debbie and Billy Shore from No Kid Hungry. The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's convenient courses have helped me learn real-life conversation in German. For example, let's say you wanted to order soup with your dinner. Die Suppe würde mir auch gefallen. That means the soup. That means I would also like the soup. And that way, I get soup with dinner. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/franken. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/franken, spelled babbel.com/franken. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Did you guys look at the $2.2 trillion package?
Yeah, what we could see into it, yes.
Yes, what you could see into it. Was there any stuff in that you felt good about?
There was something in there that we thought was going to be in there that wasn't, and it might be in the next one, which is an increase in SNAP benefits. There were some good things in the earlier packages that waived some of the regulations that would make it impossible to feed school meals to kids when schools are closed. So there was like some actual common sense that prevailed there. You know, it used to be that only the kid could pick up the meal, and now the parents can pick up the meal. It used to be that only the kid can only pick up one meal. Now you can pick up, you know, as many as you can carry home. So they did some things there that made it possible for us to replace school feeding without the schools.
Have they put enough funding out of the $2.2 trillion? There's bailouts for the cruise industry, and we're worried about oversight and where that's going to go. And evidently, you can write off real estate losses, and there's a lot of hinky stuff in there. Did they at least put in enough? Nah, I doubt they put in enough. Did they put in money for kids that are going to go hungry?
Yeah, I think they did. The real problem will be if there's money for families to support themselves. You know, one of the kind of the paradoxes I feel like we deal with is everyone's in favor of feeding a hungry child. Not everyone's in favor of doing what's best for a hungry child, which is supporting their parents or their family or whoever they're living with. So that gets more complicated. So I feel like the school meal stuff, yes, good. But, you know, broader SNAP increases for families that are going to need it, not good yet.
Let's go back a little bit here. You two formed this organization, Share Our Strength, and under which No Kid Hungry, that's part of your organization, right?
Yeah, that's kind of the main campaign of the organization. You know, we started it in 1984. Both Debbie and I've been working on Senator Gary Hart's Senate staff and then his presidential campaign. My sister Debbie was also working on the campaign. And when the campaign ended, you'll probably remember that time frame was right around the time of the catastrophic Ethiopian famine and all the things that it spawned, like Live Aid and, you know, Bob Geldof, We Are the World, USA for Africa. And we had this notion that those were all great, but that they were going to probably go away in a few years and that we ought to create a more lasting response using some of the, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, you know, campaign skills, organizing skills, community organizing skills that we had. So, yeah, we started it back then, but only 10 years ago got really focused on childhood hunger almost exclusively.
My daughter has worked with you guys a number of ways. First of all, when I came to D.C., she came to D.C. and worked for the D.C. public school system, and her first jobs there were as a she did after-school programs, including a cooking program.
Operation Frontline, now called Cooking Matters.
She was a third grade teacher for 3 years right out of college. Then she went to culinary school. And instead of becoming like a sous chef at a restaurant, this was in New York, she decided to teach kids how to cook, because the school she was in the Bronx, the kids, very often a meal was, a Coke and a hot dog.
Yeah,
that was dinner. They really didn't know how to eat and how to have healthy ingredients. So she taught kids how to cook, and did that with you guys when she first came to D.C. And she said, "You're great. Your organization is unbelievable." And then she worked for the D.C. public schools, and she also worked for United Way. In both capacities, worked very closely with your organization. And so she's a huge, huge, huge fan.
This makes me so happy. Do you have more kids that can work with us?
What's she doing now?
She is working for the D.C. public school system.
Still. Wow.
Oh, gotcha.
Awesome.
Cool.
So she continues off and on to work with you guys. And she was basically telling me a lot of the things you do right now. And during this period, you're making sure that kids aren't hungry. And she was telling me some of the challenges that they have, and she's dealing with these along with you. And I know that you're nationwide, first of all, and that you have given grants all over the country. Basically, what I want to talk about here is how many people are vulnerable during this period of time. And there are different kinds of vulnerabilities, but I want to talk about hunger here and who's very vulnerable and what you do. She told me, this was an interesting thing, and confirm this to me, that there are kids in D.C. that can't get food in their neighborhood. So they have to go to a different neighborhood, and they're going to a neighborhood where there is, it's not their territory. And so they have to go to a different territory and with their rival gangs and stuff. Are you familiar with this?
that would be fairly typical, I guess, of a lot of neighborhoods that, you know, the gang stuff aside, which we, I wouldn't say we're particularly close to, but the fact that there are, you know, food, what's commonly called now food deserts in a lot of neighborhoods. If you take the, you know, the Anacostia, the Southeast neighborhood in DC, for a long time, it's gotten a little bit better recently, but for a long time there were, you know, nothing but corner stores or bodegas or convenience stores to buy food that was not very healthy for you. So, you know, kind of one of the key focal points of the whole No Kid Hungry campaign is that we've got an infrastructure in the school system itself to at least make sure that 5 days a week, kids are getting regular meals and healthy meals. And the thing that we found, and I think, you know, this might be interesting to you as somebody who, you know, was immersed in the legislative process for so long, is we found out that although laws had been passed to create things like school lunch and school breakfast, that they weren't being utilized and that nobody was paying attention to that fact. So, yeah, I guess the statistic I would give you, Al, is that, you know, up until, and this is before, you know, let's say before COVID. So our core work for the last 10 years has been looking at the 22 million kids in the country who are getting a free or reduced price school lunch, an entitlement program exempt from sequestration, so relatively safe and protected and reliable. Of the 22 million who are getting a free school lunch, all 22 million were also eligible for breakfast. But as recently as 8 years ago, only 9 million of the 22 million were getting it, because at lunch, kids are already there. At breakfast, you have to get there before school starts, and that's harder and impossible for some families. There'd be the stigma attached to the kids who show up early, more visible self-identifying than at lunch. And in the summertime, when the schools are closed, only 3 million kids were getting it. But the crazy thing about this is that it's bought and paid for all 22 million. So a big part of what we've done over the last 10 years, again, this is pre-coronavirus, was go to governors and mayors and school superintendents and say, do you realize that a very large percentage, you know, almost half of the kids who are eligible for these meals are not getting them? You know, the conversation that I remember so vividly, Al, is one that I had with the governor of Colorado at the time, Bill Ritter, who was a former Peace Corps volunteer, had worked on nutrition issues, you know, moderate to progressive Democratic governor. And at the time, Colorado ranked 47th lowest out of 50 states in terms of their participation in these programs. And he said, well, what's that mean? And I talked about what it means for the kids and the risks to their health and ability to learn. But I said, it also means you've left about $140 million in Washington that can only be used to buy bread from your bakers and milk from your dairy farms and supplies from your vendors to feed your kids and have them do better in school. And he was, and again, this is one of the really good guys. He was shocked. He said, how can that possibly be true? You know, we kind of talk about, and we try to solve for all these logistical challenges of feeding kids, but there's also this political issue of kids are voiceless. They don't vote. They don't have, they don't make campaign contributions. They don't have lobbyists or PACs. And so sometimes even the best of elected officials, certainly at the state and local level, aren't even aware that these programs are not being utilized, you know, that we'd fought and won these battles 40, 50 years ago. And now we've gone on to fight other things and not really brought home the fruition or the harvest of what we achieved here. So we saw this huge opportunity to, you know, like a hole you could drive a truck through to get these kids fed. And we, in fact, we've added 3 million kids to school breakfast over the last 6 years, lots of other things. But to catch us up to where we are right now, the moment we're living in, you know, with COVID-19, everything, of course, has changed. All the schools are closed. And so there's now a massive effort to feed kids using these same federally reimbursements. These meals are 100% federally reimbursed, but the kids aren't in school. So we've got to find all kinds of entrepreneurial ways to feed them.
I've talked to a lot of teachers, a lot of coaches. They come to school very often on Monday hungry because the weekend wasn't so good at home. And that's why that Monday breakfast is so important. That was pre-COVID. You talked about food deserts. So I can imagine if you live in a food desert where there's one store, market or something, that doesn't have a big range of vegetables and really doesn't have all that much, that there's a run on stores now, on grocery stores, right?
Yep.
So I can imagine that if you're in a food desert, that store runs out pretty quickly, right?
That's right.
So right now, during this time, this particular time, kids in those neighborhoods have an added problem, don't they?
Well, that's exactly right. And so you really have to do two things. First of all, it's not just the kids that we were trying that weren't participating that we were trying to add to these programs. Now it's all kids. We've got 50 million public school kids, students in this country, and 30 million of them of the 50 million were getting meals at school. So the good thing is those meals are still reimbursed by the federal government if you can get them to them. So there is a source of food that's available. And so we've had to do two things. One is fund school districts, hundreds of them across the country that have set up alternate ways of feeding kids, grab and go packages of food outside the school. And so we've provided tents and refrigeration and equipment and trucks and whatever it takes to have schools be able to replicate some version of feeding. But then, particularly what's going on with unemployment. So we're seeing enormously long lines at food banks and other types of places where food is provided. And it's really not just the kids, it's their families now who need it. So we're funding food banks, we're funding YMCAs.
One of the ways we're getting the word out about this too, is this new texting line that we've set up. So we've got this service in the summer when schools are out and summer meals are really an important part of the kids' day when they can't get to the schools. And so we've got this texting service in the summer, letting families know where they can pick up a free meal. So we've converted that texting line into one that we can use now to let families know where some of these sites are that Billy was talking about were set up. So all people have to do is, text a number. They text food or in Spanish, comida, to a line 877-877. And they can, we don't have it up nationally. Right now it's in about, I think, 21 states, but we're collecting data every day. And hopefully, we'll have the national one ready to go soon. But we're in about 21 states right now with that number.
And you're seeing a lot of problems. I mean, you're national, you're in all these states, in all these communities, and you're solving problems. And I want our folks who are listening to hear what some of those are. For example, you gave a grant to the city of Oakland, California, just so that truck drivers could deliver food to these places, right? I guess that wasn't in place.
Right. So, of course, nothing was really in place before COVID-19 to provide meals to school kids who were used to getting them in school. So there's been, basically whatever the barrier is, we try to knock it down. So if a school needs to serve food at a different site, let's say they're partnering with a food bank, which a lot of school districts are doing now, and they're not doing it at school, they're going to need some support for that. A lot of schools need the personal protective equipment, just like everybody else does. In a lot of communities, bus drivers are, instead of picking kids up, driving their same route, but dropping off packages of food where they pick the kids up. But of course, they need the PPE as well. As we talk about this, one of the things that I think becomes kind of apparent, and it was true of hunger before this crisis as well, is that hunger in America, particularly when it comes to children, is a solvable problem. Our news headlines are dominated by, shortages of, masks and ventilators and hospital beds. We have no shortage of food in this country, never have, and we don't now. I mean, we've got, some supply chain issues cropping up and we've got food deserts, but fundamentally, kids in this country are not hungry because of war or famine or drought or food shortages. So these are logistical problems that if you have the political will, you can actually solve them.
I think we're seeing, that this pandemic has just uncovered this issue, which has, we've obviously been working on for a lot of years. But this, this issue of childhood hunger has existed for a long time in America. And so many Americans were just unaware. This has really shined a light on it in a way that, I think has just never happened before. And we're seeing that in the level of donations that are coming in from, you know, businesses and companies and corporations and individuals who for the first time are recognizing that we've got hunger among this population.
Yeah, you've been doing this for 36 years, so you have a pretty good perspective on it. We're going to take a break now. We'll be right back with Billy and Debbie Shore from No Kid Hungry.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I have this idea, and maybe it's just it's a stupid idea, that after this is over, then maybe we'll be a better country.
I mean, there's certainly more attention to some of these vulnerabilities than existed before. You can imagine how we used to kind of, you know, almost bang our head against the wall to get people to understand that hunger was a real issue here. Now, all of a sudden, people are aware of it because they see what's happening when the usual supports aren't there. But say a little bit more about how you see it being better. I think that's such an important and hopeful note.
Well, I think that there's something about staying at home with your family, hopefully, that might make you just realize what's important in life and what isn't. I have my doubts about Congress. I have my doubts about especially the Senate. I have my doubts about Mitch McConnell, who he and I were very close, by the way.
I can imagine.
Yeah. Oh, we'd go out to dinner. We'd have these arguments and then we'd go out to dinner and he would laugh so hard at dinner that milk would shoot out his nose.
Oh, yeah, he must be a barrel of laughs.
Oh, he is. He is. Anyway, I really worry about where this $2.2 trillion package is going. It was going to the right place. But, okay, here's what I think. I'm hoping that Americans, that all of us, kind of appreciate what we have. And also appreciate what others don't have. And I kind of think that's happening. I really do. And so this is a horrible, horrible time. But I'm hoping that we come out of this in certain ways a lot better. And I actually think that's going to be the case. And that's why I'm focusing on some of the most vulnerable people in our country right now, including, for example, women who have to go to shelters because right now there's been an uptick in domestic violence. And also on people with mental health issue and the homeless and people in prison. There is these vulnerabilities are coming to light, and I think people are seeing it, and they're getting to watch a little bit more news, which I necessarily wouldn't recommend. That's what I see for the country. Am I wrong? You've been doing this.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. You know, I mean, the virus doesn't discriminate, but the effects of the virus do. You know, if you're poor, if you're African American, if you're Native American, there are all kinds of underlying reasons why you're going to have a tougher time with this virus. So the fact that it is universal, I think does bring people together. Everybody I talk to, and certainly for me, just being with my daughter day in and day out for me is a joy as she, you know, graduates from her senior year and is off to college. Like, I'm with her every day. And I think families feel that they're cooking together and eating together. But there's also just the helping of the neighbors. I live in an apartment building in DC. I've got a couple of, you know, pretty old neighbors on my floor, and everybody is pulled together to help everybody. And you see that from, you know, restaurants that are decimated, obviously, in this crisis, as an industry, reaching out to figure out how to feed the community. Like, here they are, they've lost their restaurant, you know, their jobs, their income, their future, and they're trying to figure out how to feed hungry people. So, you know, I do think there's a very, very strong pool of people that are coming together around this.
Well, and I guess the question, and you're better positioned to answer this, Al, because of your experience than we are, but the question is, how does all that translate down the road into policy? I mean, I'm an optimist and an idealist, so there's a part of what you're saying that completely resonates with me, but I also worry about, you know, I've been watching all these ads on TV thanking our first responders and thanking grocery store cashiers and others. And to me, the question is going to be, when this is all over, are we going to do more than thank them? Are we going to be willing to have higher taxes so that we can provide them the assistance they need? Are we going to be willing to pay them more? That to me is
No. I'm sorry. When I said I'm optimistic, I didn't want to go that far.
But you know what I mean? I mean, to me, that's where the rubber is going to really meet the road on all of this good feeling that's going to be expressed. Are we willing to do some things so that folks are not as vulnerable in the future? And those questions get political really fast, and they get polarizing really fast. And I worry that we don't have the leadership. To me, it's not out of the question that people could come together to do the right thing on those kinds of issues, but it would require a certain kind of leadership that I don't see, particularly in the Senate, as you've referenced.
Well, I think that it'll obviously be up to, we're going to have an election in November, and we're going,
maybe,
and we're
hope
seeing,
so.
Oh, that's
so.
True.
Yeah.
That's true. I think we're going to have an election in November. I'm hoping by then we'll be back to some kind of normal, but maybe not. We're not going to have vaccination by then, so we'll see where we are. But the American people, at that point, we're going to have to say, look, this whole thing exposed a number of things. And one of them is the fact that people at the bottom, we have people dying because they have to work. So they have to work in the grocery store, and we've seen some of those people are there just as much on the front lines as, God bless them, the medical responders and the doctors and the nurses. But they're doing that because they have to, so they
right.
can eat themselves.
Right.
So, are we as a country going to make this an issue going into what hopefully will be the election in November? And that's a question. That is a question. Bernie Sanders would raise it. His whole campaign was about the division between the haves and the have-nots in this country. And how stark is it now? I've talked to people who are sheltering at their estate on the Chesapeake. And then there are people that you are serving who are crowded into a small apartment.
One of my colleagues just emailed me an article from the San Antonio paper. Here's the lead, and perhaps the most sobering reminder yet of the economic fallout caused by the coronavirus pandemic. The San Antonio Food Bank aided 10,000 households Thursday in a record-setting giveaway at a Southside flea market. 10,000 households. I mean, think of that. And it's not fun to go wait in line at a food giveaway. That's not a good feeling. People are only doing it, I'm sure, if they really have to.
A little different, but connected to that, Billy, I'm thinking about the requests that we have coming in, the level of funding that is being requested of our organization. So, you know, we're giving out these emergency grants. We've done about $5 million just in the last couple of weeks of new money that we've had to raise, you know, for these emergency grants. But we've got like over $100 million of requests, $100 million of requests into our office, mostly from food banks and, you know, other feeding programs. So we've obviously never seen anything like it. It's hard to imagine just how deep and wide the need is and how long it's going to go on.
You know, we're an organization that has worked very closely with the restaurant and the food service, the culinary community. We do food and wine events. That's how we raise money. We do corporate partnerships. You know, we've never been dependent on individual donations, but we've had 35,000 individual donations in the last 18 days. And that's got to be from a lot of people who are, you know, somewhat concerned about their own finances and their where the economy is going, as I think we all are. So there has been a level of generosity and giving that transcends certainly any type of issue that we've seen before. And, you know, if folks go to our website, nokidhungry.org, there's a big fat donate button that hits you right in the nose when you log on. But it's the kind of thing that enables us to meet these requests that Debbie was talking about in terms of food banks and school districts that desperately need these resources.
I think there's this general awareness, like for me, that's changed. So for example, you know, we work obviously with, you know, people that are mostly living right below the poverty line or deep in poverty. But like, I've got friends, you know, Al, to your point about how we're starting to feel differently about the world and maybe putting us in a better place. I have two friends. One is a photographer. One is a landscaper. I guess they would both be considered, I guess, in the gig economy. They go from gig to gig. You know, they're friends who I go out to have dinner with and work out with. They are, you know, they're finished. And they are struggling around, you know, the rent in May and June. Now, these are people I never would have thought of in a million years that would have been panicked. They're single. They're in the gig economy and they're losing everything. And they don't know when they're going to make a dime. So, you know, for me, even like just having friends in that situation is totally new and different.
Yeah, this has been so disruptive. And, you know, this is why Attorney General Barr is saying, like, let's not we can't have the solution be worse than the problem. And, well, wait a minute. The reason things are improving is that people are, thank God, following the shelter in place and the social distance directives. Is that hard for people who are getting assistance at food banks, et cetera?
Yeah, I'd say it's darn near impossible. I mean, people are trying to, you know, follow social distancing rules, but it's just that's not a situation that lends itself to it really well. So I think people are having to take a lot of risks to get the food that they need. We do a call every Friday afternoon. Lorraine Powell Jobs, Emerson Collective, which is the name of her kind of umbrella organization, does a call, which is kind of a coordinating call for the leaders of 8 or 10 national anti-hunger organizations. So it's us and Feeding America and Save the Children and some others. And we all report somewhat down in the weeds on, you know, how many people we have fed this week and how many people we were not able to serve that needed to be served and what the obstacles are and so forth. And I always get off the call and I'm always kind of torn or ambivalent because in one sense, when you hear all this, it's just this absolute marvel of social entrepreneurship and ingenuity and nonprofit persistence that's getting all these people fed. And on the other hand, it's ludicrous and almost disgraceful that this is the way millions of Americans are what they're depending on to get their food. So, I mean, obviously, thank goodness we've got these stopgap safety net efforts, but it's almost insane when you hear what's being done for something just as basic as feeding people or making sure that families can feed their kids.
Yeah, you know, and that makes me angry, which is why I'm doing another podcast parallel to this, Pod Damn America.
Yeah, I like that.
I like that's great.
I'm gonna have Reverend Wright.
It's great.
Obama's minister, you know, so I can vent.
Can I ask you a political question?
Sorry.
Can you figure out how the Dems get back in the presidential race?
Yeah. Joe Biden is going to be our nominee. And I think President Trump is now running against him, but mainly against the coronavirus.
Yeah.
I think the coronavirus is beating him. I think Americans are seeing that his response has been unbelievably awful and ugly. Don't know if anyone can watch those White House conferences now, but I would encourage if any of the journalists who are there and can ask the questions, there aren't many because they're doing social distancing there, I think that you got to change the way you ask questions. I think you have to do a little sarcasm that escapes him. Mm-hmm. For example, things like, Mr. President, you gave yourself a 10 out of 10 in terms of your performance in response to the coronavirus. Is there anything that you could have done better?
Well, I'm surprised they haven't gotten together and agreed that when he says to somebody, you know, that's a nasty question and berates them, to me, like the next person, instead of changing the topic, should say, well, actually, I have the same question, Mr. President. And just everybody in the room ought to do that until he answers it.
Right.
Or you could go like, I can't believe how nasty my colleague was there. Yeah. And then ask this nasty question. You didn't deserve that, Mr. President. You gave yourself a 10 out of 10. You've done a flawless job.
But he doesn't respond like a regular person would respond to anything. So I don't even know if the sarcasm would, I mean, it would definitely go probably over his head.
You know what? It wouldn't go over his head because he knows sarcasm. He's sarcastic to them all the time. It's just the problem is that he's the only one allowed to be sarcastic. Everybody should be allowed to be sarcastic in there.
Can't this podcast get you a credential to get into the White House press room and mix it up?
Oh, yeah. They'd let me in. Oh, yeah. No. Actually, they've invited me. No.
One other question about the election, since we're kind of on it, is how I've seen Joe Biden like once in the last 2 weeks, you know, from his basement talking. I don't know how he's going to get out there. You know, I don't know how anybody can focus on anything. But so I guess I just worry that there's just not any even close to possibility of hearing from the Democratic Party about the election, at least in the next, you know, 6 weeks.
I don't think the next 6 weeks matter all that much in terms of Biden. You know, as I say, it is Trump versus the virus. And the virus is kicking his ass. And people are going, you know, call the fight. Stop the fight. Stop it. Oh, my God. Stop the fight. It's just sad what we're watching there with Donald Trump. FDR famously did these fireside chats. But, you know, those were like once every 3 months.
Yeah.
And he actually worked on them. He actually prepared for them and wrote them.
Right.
And also was honest with people. And all of this, you're not going to change Donald Trump. He's a sick man and has always been and always will be. We need to get rid of him. We need to also get rid of these Republicans in the Senate. And we need to give President Biden a majority in the Senate and in the House so that we can start turning this stuff around. So you guys maybe will get a little bit more help from the federal government.
Well,
that's what I'm hoping.
It sure makes a big difference when Tom Vilsack was Secretary of Department of Agriculture under President Obama.
Wasn't he the best?
Oh, we just had enormous support. And I would say that, you know, there are a lot of career officials in all of the departments, including agriculture, and many of them have continued to be very, very diligent about protecting kids through these school meals programs. But when Tom Vilsack was secretary, you really got the sense of what a government can do when it wanted to reach out to those who are most vulnerable.
And for our listeners, USDA, the Department of Agriculture, is in charge of the school lunch program.
Yeah, exactly.
And you had a real champion there. And, you know, Michael Lewis, who wrote the book The Fifth Risk, which was about, in large part, about the transition, the Trump transition. The Obama administration prepared all these briefings and briefing books for this transition. And basically, no one showed up. So the first person who showed up at USDA was from Pepsi. Because they wanted to lobby to get Pepsi back into the school lunch program. So that was a bad sign. He may have been the second one. I think the other one was a guy who's against animal rights. He was from, like, you know, let's go back to torturing livestock.
I remember reading that book, and of course, what you've just described was also true at, you know, Department of Energy, and I think, you know, most of the departments. They just it was, that book is really sobering, The Fifth Risk, and you know, it's just when you picture that across the entire government, wow.
Yeah, well, I just talked to Michael. We just did a podcast. And I asked him, because basically the fifth risk is the risk that the government isn't paying attention to. So I asked him if he had enough material now for the paperback.
I'll bet.
You guys are the best. Let's get you a lot of money from my listeners. Go to nokidhungry.org.
We need it. We've got a tall order ahead of us, and it's going to be a lot of months that we're doing this work, particularly with the unemployment. So thank you for putting a spotlight on this, Al, and for caring about it as much as you do.
Isn't it great to have great people on, everybody? It's really nice. These people exist, and there's actually quite a few of them. And, well, thank you, Billy and Debbie Shore.
Thank you very much.
Who founded Share Our Strength, and No Kid Hungry is part of that organization, and they feed a lot of, not just children, but of families, and I'm so proud to have you. Thank you.
Thank you, Al.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.